KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio with our Trails Report, Charlie Sturgis of Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what have we got?
What do we got? Let's see. You know, we've been super busy. If you're around here for the 4th, you can tell that we're a really busy little town these days. So one of the suggestions I got from one of our trail guys out there for the trail report today was, you know, there's a lot of good trails out and about around us. And so if you're really kind of being crowd phobic or don't like crowded trails, there's a lot of cool stuff. You know, whether you go to Strawberry Narrows, Lewis Peak, Ben Lomond, down by Timpanogos, there's a lot of alternatives to go ride that take very little time in your car. And also, quite honestly, as you know, Leslie, locally, you can get off the main drags around here and be pretty comfortable just on, you know, things like the Link and, you know, upper areas and up in Shadow Lake. And so, anyhow, don't fret about being on crowded trails. Go find something. Go experiment. Go adventure. Look for something a little different. All the crews, Centerville Basin, as well as Mountain Trails crews, are out there starting to side veg. So we have a lot of overgrown trails just due to basically the wet spring and some of the late weather we had. We are working on it. If it's something out there that's a concern to you, please just let us know at, you know, charlie@mountaintrails.org or whatever, and we'll try to get taken care of. Otherwise, also Pinecone still reports a little bit of snow. Basin's been up there cranking that outside vegging up there, clearing trees. They sort of what Bob gave me this morning was, pardon me, was that it's now the snow's gone to the level that at least it's probably passable.
Pardon me.
Yeah, had to get that sneeze out. Anyways, things should be great out there. I did get a little report from the Uintas. If you're headed out that way, it is getting buggier in a big way. You know, actually, it's always interesting. It gets buggy, really buggy out there. And yet here, we're really, I mean, I see some bugs. I mean, I see a few mosquitoes here and there, but we're not getting bugged out the same way. So Uintas, always pleasant this time of year, but the bug season is starting.
Okay, so when you veg out, you just use a chainsaw? I mean, what are just go in there with clippers?
Actually, a fully overgrown hedge trimmer is the tool of choice. So it's gas powered. Some of it's done by hand, just pruning, just because sometimes it's easier. But the side vegger is kind of just that. It's just an overgrown hedge trimmer.
So. Well, we may be getting some rain in the forecast, but the trails are pretty dusty.
Yeah, we go to, you know, it's that kind of brown dirt thing. We go to dust faster than areas that have a lot of really loamy black dirt. So, you know, hopefully we'll be get a little. I was sort of disappointed we didn't get a little rain Sunday. You know, that was kind of a full on blow by. So,
okay, anything else?
No, just get out there, have fun, be safe, and remember, we just have a lot of people here because they come here to have fun, and we have a really cool trail system, so let's just keep it cool by enjoying it.
Okay, Charlie, see you next week.
Thanks, Leslie.
On the phone with me now, a monthly update of development going on in Summit County. I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with the Klein Dolly parcel. So this is, again, about 30 acres that Summit County purchased there near Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. Looking at transit-oriented development, this was presented to the council recently. So what's the process for this? I mean, who's actually, it's a county project, so who prepares the application and zone change request?
Well, it's a county project. Maybe starting off really quickly in the process, a couple of weeks ago, the council had an opportunity to sit down and get a presentation from Jeff Jones, our economic development director, and Reed Ewing and Brenda Shear from the University of Utah. And the purpose of that was to give council sort of an overview of what some of the opportunities of the sites, what those could be. I think what they learned from that the carryaway from that is there's a number of possibilities that site could offer in solving some problems, housing, transit, and maybe even some integrated open space with some of the adjacent uses, the school in East Canyon. Moving forward, I think what I would expect is probably something that looks a lot like going out for a requests for qualifications and requests for proposals for someone to help us refine some of those potential design options. Who would make that application? More than likely, it would be Summit County. Summit County would be taking itself through its own process. You know, we would be going to hold ourselves to sort of the same standard that a private sector developer would be. Would there be other applicants with that? There's a possibility that there could be other stakeholders that would be part of that application. But it would go ultimately through the same process that anyone else who would be proposing what I would call a private sector development process. A lot of this is still in the works right now. I think what we're trying to do is find the balance point between not rushing through a project and not having the right amount of community input on that, and balancing that with the need to, I think, seize this opportunity to maybe control a piece of property that's strategic and come up with a design that helps solve some community problems. It's not going to be a silver bullet. Klein Dolly is not going to solve all of our problem, but it's going to be hopefully an arrow in the quiver that can help address some of the things like some, you know, community obtainable and employee housing that's maybe not transit-oriented specifically. You know, transit-oriented development by its nature involves a lot of density and a connection to existing transit systems. This, I like to describe this as maybe more transit-sensitive development, you know, being able to integrate things like housing, maybe some potential neighborhood services into an area that has sort of a mix of those already. So a whole lot more to come with that.
Yeah. So what's the timeline on this?
Remains to be seen right now. Probably a question best answered by Jeff Jones. I don't want to get out in front of him, but I know he's working hard on that to put together that timetable. It's a priority project for the county. So I think as we move through the summer into the fall, those deadlines, those timeframes are going to be open for more review and discussion.
All right. Let's see. The Ecker Hill parking lot process. This is currently a view area owned by the State Department of Transportation. Now, does Summit County have to purchase this in order to make this 500-spot parking lot?
Undetermined at this point. Maybe not. We're still in discussions with UDOT on this. Council's about a week or so back, I think it was may have been the same meeting that we were discussing Klein Dolly, asked for staff to come back and have an overall discussion of this remote parking strategy. I think that's wise. I think what we need to be able to explain to the council, the planning commission, and the public, how all of these individual potential projects are going to mesh together to be one sort of unified solution. And if the development at the canyons moves forward and the objective is to try to get people out of their cars prior to getting into the intersection of Kimball Junction and getting to the resort, things like Ecker Hill are going to be strategic, and as well as to a large degree, Klein Dolly. We've been so involved in the fine-grained discussion on these things. I think, you know, it's wisdom on the part of the council to step back and make sure that when we're looking at these individual projects, that ultimately they're going to work in concert with one another. So in terms of Ecker Hill, kind of similar to Klein Dolly, a priority project, not a final design. There will be a permit process procedure that these will go through, but we're going to be moving forward with those. So.
Well, do you think that you'd have a parking area for in time for this winter, or unlikely?
Boy, it's really hard to say. I wouldn't want to go on the record to say if we would be able to have that here for this winter. Again, being able to make some critical decisions on that is important. And it would be premature for me to speculate at this point.
All right. Let's see. Where are we with the Silver Creek Village? Are we in the ground here with anything?
You know, I went by there this morning, and I actually saw curb and gutter starting to rise from the middle of the sagebrush. They're in the developer is in the process of constructing the first phase of the road and the water and sewer that's going into the project. Currently, there's a couple of things pending in front of the Planning Commission. Next Tuesday night, there will be two separate park proposals that will be going through conditional uses. Both of those are obligations that were required of the developer as part of the original approval. In addition to that, we have a couple of initial subdivision applications that will start dividing the property into lots, into development parcels. It's my understanding that probably one of the very first vertical developments is going to be a project that's associated with Mountain Lands. Mountain Lands is in negotiations to acquire part of that property to develop some of the affordable housing units that were part of the original proposal. And it's like there's 330 required as part of the project's development agreement, and they're going to be coming and building, I think, 280, 287 of those units. So we're in discussions with them on that. I think most of what people will see here this year is that utility and infrastructure work, and we'll be progressing through those development permit approval processes into the fall. My guess would be 2018 is when you're going to see things kind of vertically coming out of the ground. But key is a lot of the community obligations that were part of that are front-loaded. We think that that's a good thing. If part of the front-loading involves some community housing, that's fantastic too. So I think this is finally getting some momentum and moving forward.
All right, and with the grand opening of Skull Candy a couple of weeks ago, what are the prospects now with Boyer Tech? Have you seen anything proposed?
We haven't had any new applications for new projects within the Tech Center, so all quiet on that front. We have been working through our Kimball Junction Neighborhood Master Planning Committee. That committee was set up by council a number of months ago. We've had several meetings. Part of what we're looking at are there potential land use changes that could be made, maybe mixing up some more uses, how we can take a look at those potential changes and attempt to solve some of the circulation problems, the connectivity, the wayfinding in that area. I think we'll be making some recommendations or formalizing some recommendations on that here this fall and then be moving it through its own public review process. It'll go to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, and then ultimately we'll present those findings to the council. The end product of that is going to be a list of or a series of recommendations and probably a revised potential future land use map for the area that would be incorporated into our general plan. That end result doesn't in and of itself change zoning or create any zone change, but it lays sort of a framework and a map moving forward in the future. So council could consider maybe some rezonings if they find it necessary, or modify some development agreements if and only they find that necessary. And I think it's a great exercise. It's one of the things that were originally contemplated when we adopted our most recent general plan updates, you know, more specificity to the general plan than sort of our broader land use, future land use map.
So when will that group then make some recommendations to the county council?
Right now we have that targeted to be completed in the early fall, September.
Okay. Hey, real quick, I was saw you recently sitting at the back of the room of a county council meeting held there at the Sheldon Richens building, and I was thinking, Rick telling me that you actually do spend some time at county council meetings, I'm guessing as well as at Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, East Side Planning Commission meetings as well. Are you at all those?
I attend all those meetings. Somebody asked me one time how much time I actually spent in night meetings, and I actually did a calculation, and it was staggering. It was like 18,000 hours, you know, like a year and a half of my life. But that's part of what I do. You know, council has a portion of their meeting, generally around 6 o'clock at night, where the members of the public can come in and ask a question, or they might have a question, and I like to make myself available. If I can answer that at the meeting and they don't have to wait a week in order to get a response, or if we don't have to type a series of texts and emails, which I'm notoriously slow at being a hunt and peck typer, if we can do that there at the meeting, I think it's a benefit to the community and a benefit to the council. You know, there's always that balance, you know, like, are you sitting in meetings and wasting time where you could be doing work otherwise? I'm always mindful of that. But, you know, those evening meetings, usually I'll take my computer with me and do some work. I just like being there. I learn from the discussion, and if I can be there to help answer questions for them, all the better.
Okay, so you don't think it impacts your day-to-day job?
No, not at all.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Pat, we'll talk to you next month. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks. Bye.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. Now, 8:28, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, coming up Wednesday, the Park City Chamber Bureau hosting its annual meeting, at which they'll recap the year past, have a look ahead, and we'll also be honoring Becky Kearns with this year's Miles Redeman Spirit of Hospitality Award. In the studio with an update, Membership Director Allison Kulo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So is it too late to participate in this?
Not at all. We will be taking reservations up to about 3 o'clock on Tuesday. We do want to make sure that the Marriott can have plates and lunch for everyone. And so we have a little bit of a wiggle room for people, but they are absolutely able to go onto our website, which is visitparkcity.com, and to sign up to be able to attend the meeting. And again, you don't have to be a member. This is a great opportunity. If you don't know what the Chamber and Visitor Bureau does, or you're interested in finding out more, you are more than welcome to attend.
Okay, like 11:30 to?
11:30 to 1:30. So it's a two-hour program. We've got it packed. But as you said before, we do everything from a recap from last year. We will be handing out our fiscal year 2017 report, which just ended on June 30, and that will be the day it's first available. We'll be going over our winter marketing plan for the 17-18 winter season, and then as well going awarding Becky Kearns with the Miles Redeman Spirit of Hospitality. So quite a busy afternoon, but a great time for people to come, understand what we do, and then network with everyone in the community.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the past year. What can you say about it?
The past year was great. As you start to look at our numbers with communication, so communications is reporting from media. So it is essentially editorial in nature. We received $30 million worth of coverage as far as the media is concerned. When you look at our website statistics, we have increased our website visits significantly. We were just around 1 million last year, and this year we're at 1.5, which I'm really excited about. When you look at visitor numbers, we were slightly down. And when I mean slightly, we're looking at like 10,000 roughly down as far as visitor numbers. But when you look at the transient room tax, and again, the transient room tax is that tax on hotel rooms, that actually went up by 7%. So what we're seeing is the average daily rate is increasing in town. So again, we're seeing a lot of successes. We're continuing to make sure that we are letting people know what Park City is, letting them know what we have available, welcoming guests to the town. And as well, one of our jobs is helping the businesses in the community and the economy. And another thing that I'm excited about, which I believe we spoke about earlier, you have, is the Camas Valley Business Association. So starting to reach out more into Summit County and looking at how we can help those businesses and strengthen that economy.
So you'll also present, as you mentioned, next year's marketing plan. Does that change a lot? And when you start talking about getting $30 million of free media, I mean, why do we bother?
Well, we still need to bother when you look at what we have. And if you look at even just our occupancy rates in town in general, we still have quite a bit of ability to be able to hold more people. I know there's a discussion in town about, is that really what we need. But when you look at the economy and how things are running, we do need to keep that going. When you look at our marketing, you know, we do spend money on advertisements on TV and internet. But when you look at that comparatively, I think we're well balanced as you look at other chamber and visitor bureaus of a similar type of resort town that we have.
So in terms of marketing, I mean, pretty much status quo from what you did this year?
Well, you'll be seeing some changes. We're doing a little bit of changing out of markets, which we'll describe, changing some television into just purely web campaigns, and then starting some new outreach in the Southeast. So we'll be reviewing that, what that means, and why we're doing it.
Yeah. And with the possible cut in transient room tax funding from Summit County, does the marketing plan incorporate that, or this was already set and you're good through this year?
Yeah, we're absolutely good through this year. We still have the existing contract. As you mentioned, there are discussions that are beginning between the county and the chamber, but that is not affecting this fiscal year's budget.
All right. As I mentioned, this meeting will also honor Becky Kearns, the Miles Reitemann Spirit of Hospitality Award. What's that award even about?
So that award really recognizes people in town who have been working behind the scenes to make Park City what it is. Jana and Gary Cole received it. Jan Wilking, people who go above and beyond just kind of those limits of their jobs or limits that normal people would have in the community. They're out there pushing for things, whether they be for programs. Becky was very involved in the outdoor concert series and starting free concerts, looking at what was coming in the community and what can we make available to all. And so really kind of pushing the limits as far as making sure everyone is able to enjoy Park City and what's available and, you know, organizing. She had worked on the hospital project, and so a lot of work pre-construction as well as post being on their board. So really, again, outside of your normal kind of business hours, what do you do to help keep this community running and make it a great place to live?
All right. How is she selected? By the membership or just by...
It's a small committee, of which Miles is a member, being that it's named after him. And then it's just double-checked with, I believe, the executive committee, and then we move forward on it. And she does know. It's not a surprise.
Yeah, right. And then summer season, we're right in the middle of it. How are things shaping up?
Sure. So when I look at the reservations on the books for July and then the beginning of August, July looks very strong. We're seeing a good run of days where the number of reservations on the books is greater than last year at this time. And again, what it is it's a snapshot. What do those hotel and lodging properties have already reserved? We will see those numbers go up once we have confirmed bookings and once they actually stay here. But looking at July looks very strong. And then August is looking fantastic, especially once we start to get to about August 7th and moving forward. My dates only go to about August 15th, but again, really strong numbers. Looking to absolutely match last year, if not beat it.
Yeah. When we look at summer-winter numbers, I mean, how close are they?
I mean,
is it a 30-70, 40, 60 split?
That's a great question. Our summers have definitely been increasing, but as far as the percentage split, as far as the numbers go, I can't tell you that off the top of my head. But again, summers have been going strong. We've been seeing September stronger than ever. October, with our group numbers, with a lot of the groups coming to the community meetings, we see that getting stronger as well. But we're not at a 50-50, but we're not at a 70-winter-30-summer. I mean, we're probably, I'm guessing, a 60-winter-40-summer.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just again, we'd love to see everyone at the annual meeting. Visit parkcity.com/RSVP, and you'll be able to see that event.
Okay. Hey, Allison, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Allison Kulo is the membership director for the Park City Chamber Bureau. Well, Park City resident Heidi Matthews was elected as president of the Utah Education Association a year ago. We invited her back to the studio to give us an overview of how things went. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk a little about the highlights of your first year as UEA president.
Well, it has been quite a year. I can't believe it's actually been a year of firsts in a number of ways. A lot of successes, a lot of challenges. I think probably one of the biggest things that I have noticed is this shift from having a real focus on Park City, as I have for years and years, to this greater statewide perspective and learning all of the different ways that the Utah Education Association lifts and supports public education throughout the state.
Well, that was something, a question I had thought of, I mean, was just how has that changed for you? Because is it difficult to step outside of the Park City that you've, you know, really tried to support and having to find yourself supporting what's good for the state of Utah as opposed to what's maybe not going to hurt Park City?
It is, but it's also exciting in finding those ways that you can come to a pivotal point where it works for everyone. And I think that we have that opportunity, particularly focusing on the teacher shortage, which is something that has been quite a focus in the past year of really raising awareness of the fact that fewer and fewer people are entering our classrooms and that teachers are leaving at alarming rates.
And is that, have you done any kind of surveys? Do you know why they're not coming into the profession? Is it just it's the pay?
Pay is definitely one aspect of it, and that has been getting the most attention, which is exciting, in the last spring with a number of contract settlements throughout the state that really recognized that wages were not keeping pace, that it was one component of why people are leaving the classroom. But it's just one. You know, one of the aspects is time and workload and increasing demands and accountabilities and compliances and standardized tests and all of these things that are heaped more and more on teachers, for sure. But with regards to the teacher shortage and the ability for local areas to increase their revenues to be able to offer competitive salaries, that's one thing that has been challenging for me personally in seeing these districts throughout the state that simply don't have the property values, the capacity to be able to increase those revenues and offer those competitive salaries, and what those impacts are in those communities is pretty concerning.
Yeah. I mean, do we have any idea how short we are in terms of teachers?
You know, last year there were 240 teachers who entered through the academic pathway to teaching, which was a new licensure that was presented by the state school board last July. In fact, it was my sixth day on the job was the hearing for this licensure. And it was a really concerning way to entice people to enter the classroom, because it essentially removed any formal training, any pedagogical experience, any actual classroom experience in order to receive a full license to go into the classroom.
Well, they do have to take some education classes, no? Isn't that part of it?
That's the alternative route to licensure. So the alternative route to licensure has been in place for a number of years, where someone who has an inclination and has a background in a content area could enter an agreement with their district district oversight to kind of learn on the job but have significant supervision, have coursework tied in with it. Very supportive of alternative route to licensure. We have a number of teachers in Park City who have gone that route. It's definitely a good flexibility for a number of people. The academic pathway to teaching, however, was very different in that it granted full licensure from day one, and it required no teaching experience. You had to have a bachelor's degree in your background experience. And
so of those 240, any idea how many are going to stick with it?
Well, statistics show there within 55 years, 50% are leaving approximately. Within 7, it's more like 60%, which is really concerning. Not sure of the statistics for that particular group entering that way, but it's a challenging job. And I think that those of us who have gone through traditional routes and have had the support and mentoring in our districts over the years, we're much more likely to stay in the profession because we've received those supports. We know more about what we're getting into with regards to classroom management and that kind of thing going in.
Yeah. Back to this notion of teacher support. The Salt Lake Tribune did a story on kind of how they talked about donut funding. I mean, basically, we saw here in Park City School District, teachers receive a $7,000 pay raise. And while other areas around us got pay raises, nothing like we saw here in Park City. So, I mean, that means that now Park City is going to attract the teachers and kind of leave some of those more rural areas without. I mean, is that a problem? I mean, is there some talk about maybe some kind of teacher salary equalization?
It's one of the things I've learned is every problem is an opportunity as well. And I see these the discrepancies or the disparities in salaries as a real opportunity for us to focus on the necessity of having a statewide funding effort, which we don't have, because there is significant pressure. I mean, we've got 20 miles that separates $20,000 in starting salaries. Well, maybe not quite that much, but 15 to 17. That's a significant salary increase. And what does that do for equity in our state is definitely concerning. What we're focusing on is the a possibility of a statewide initiative and funding with the Our Schools Now, which is a group of businessmen, Salt Lake Chamber, who've come together and said we must adequately fund our schools. And this will be a initiative, hopefully getting on the ballots. We're going to be starting to collect signatures this summer to get it onto the ballot to begin to address statewide funding and hopefully close those gaps that we have in capacities of districts to be able to compete for salaries, support the necessary funding for all students in our state, not just those who happen to live in areas where they have that income.
So the weighted pupil unit, the WPU, is not doing that?
Well, the weighted pupil unit is one of the greatest equalizers that we have in our state, and in fact, we're one of the most equalized states in the country in terms of education funding. What we don't have is adequate funding, and that's what this initiative, the Our Schools Now initiative, will address.
So that's something the UEA is getting behind.
Yes, in fact, it was last November that the UEA board voted to join. And have been progressing, helping to shape the initiative language throughout.
So we don't have that done yet, the language?
The initiative language was filed on June 6th, I believe, it's in the Lieutenant Governor's offices. The required hearings will be taking place on July 11th. That's this coming Tuesday. They're throughout the state. The closest one to us will be at Wasatch Elementary School in the Avenues. It'll be at 6 o'clock. Great opportunity to learn more about the initiative and really the choice that we're facing as a state, which is, you know, do we value education? And if we do, what does that entail? Because right now, we do not have the adequate funds to fulfill our responsibilities in terms of education for all of our students.
Well, basically what the initiative calls for, right, is a statewide tax increase. So a sales tax, is that what it
would help? It's a mix. Initially, they had focused more on, entirely on income tax. Now, after hearing the input, they moved to part of it being income, part of it being sales. Again, hoping to shift from the what of the tax increase to the why of what it will do and our value in public education, and particularly for those who are most vulnerable, our students in poverty, in our rural areas, where the funding is inadequate and they simply don't have the capacity to raise that on their own.
Yeah. So how much would this raise if it was actually voted in?
Well, it would be over a 3-year period, and the estimations are between $750 million with a little bit more coming out of the governor's office in their predictions, but about $750
million. Wow. So this was a successful year for school funding, thanks to the state legislature and the increase in the WPU, but can that continue?
Can the WPU increases continue?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it was a very successful year, given our existing resources, that education was prioritized across the board. I think that the real question comes down to, are we as a state willing to appropriate more than just our existing resources?
Well, the word was is that the legislature did this kind of in response to the Our Schools Now threat of, you know, kind of doing an end run around the state legislature. It's like, if you're not going to fund it, you know what, we'll go to the voters ourselves. And the state legislature, of course, saying, well, we were the people's representatives. So yeah. There seems to be, you know, some conflict there. So, I mean, they're saying it's like, well, if we can do this the way that we've always done it, we don't need that initiative. But Our Schools Now is saying you haven't proved yourselves, or?
As I said, it was that we were very appreciative of the legislators' efforts given the existing resources. But as we saw in the springtime when local associations were negotiating in their districts, and districts were very willing to entertain pretty significant salary increases, recognizing that they're were struggling to compete in this arena and it with keeping people in the classroom and having the most effective people in the classroom. That recognition, local communities are increasing their taxes, increasing their investments to be able to attract and keep their teachers. Not all districts have that capacity. And that's that donut that you were talking about. Some can and some can't. And without a statewide initiative, we're not going to be able to have equity in our state. And teacher salaries are just one small piece of the puzzle. We need mentoring programs for our youngest teachers to keep them, or our newest teachers to keep them in the classroom. We need programs to help support people in poverty and our English language learners and all of our students who are coming to us with greater needs that they need to be addressed so that they can learn.
So your term is what, 4 years?
It's a 3-year term, so one down
and two to go.
Yeah.
And again, so funding is going to be the big issue then ahead of you for this second year?
Absolutely. Funding and, of course, what we're facing on a national level with the curveballs being thrown at us from the Secretary of Education and the current administration in terms of budgets and focus on perhaps vouchers, which we know the people of Utah have spoken against vouchers pretty significantly back in 2007, but is definitely going to be something that we'll need to be raising awareness about what they do, the harm that vouchers cause to public education, particularly our most vulnerable students.
What else? I know just returned back from a national conference.
Yes, I just returned from Boston. It was the exciting NEA Representative Assembly, where delegates from throughout the country come together. There were about 11,000 people there. It was pretty stunning. It's the largest democratically run organization in the country, with a one person, one vote. Probably our biggest two focuses of this event, aside from just the inspiration of the solidarity, and that was we elected our NEA president for her second term. And, of course, Lily Eskelson Garcia is from Utah. So I had the honor of nominating her, which was pretty stunning. The other thing was we considered and passed a pretty significant policy statement on charter schools moving forward that brought about a lot of discussion and will really help kind of solidify our belief statements about charter schools moving forward.
And what is that?
Well, there were three main recommendations, and one is just kind of separating which charter schools we can really get around and support and which we have concerns with. And really comes down to transparency of funding, you know, using public dollars and being able to track where they go. And also the governance of the charter schools and how they are run with elected officials or not.
So. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just again, that the hearing for the Our Schools Now initiative, we're going to be hearing quite a bit about this initiative in the coming months and being asked to sign the petition to get it on the ballot. And I just urge everyone to sign that so that we can consider this as a state. The hearing is tomorrow at 6:00. Closest one is Wasatch Elementary in the Avenues. You can get more information at ourschoolsnow.com. And That's about it. Thanks for having me on.
Not tomorrow, Tuesday.
Did I say tomorrow?
Yeah,
gosh.
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay. Tuesday the 11th. Thank you so much.
All right. Heidi Matthews again, the president of the Utah Education Association. It's 8:53.
Christopher K. Greenwood and Associates proudly supports Park City and KPCW. I'm Chris Greenwood, here to provide Summit County and Wasatch County residents with legal expertise in criminal defense, DUI, family law, divorce, real estate, and personal injury. Christopher K. Greenwood and Associates at the Gateway Centers.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Stein Erickson Lodge bringing back its Hops on the Hill this summer. In the studio, I have executive chef Zane Holmquist. Good morning, Zane.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks. So this kicks off Tuesday, July 11th. It'll run for 5 total Tuesdays through August 8th. So what happens here?
Correct. Yeah, so starting next week, so lots of fun things going on the Hill. So we have our craft beer and local food pairings. So that kicks off at 6 to 7:30. So you can come up and do just the food pairing or the food and beer pairing. But we also kick off with a great concert, some great local artists every week. And that's going to go from 6 to 9. So you can sit on the grass, no charge, and just enjoy the views in the summer mountain. You can come in and sit in the Trollhalland Lounge and have some food and a drink and have full service if you want. We also have our grills going on out on the grass for the concert, so you can have a hot dog or a hamburger sitting on the grass and enjoy and invite everybody up.
Okay. And again, it's if you just want to come sit, maybe ride your bike up, you'll be the music from 6 to 9, you
six
think?
To 9, and we love to see the families bring a pet and ride your mountain bike up, bring the family bikes, and it's as casual as you want to be. Sometimes people think you have to dress up to come to Stein's, but not for this event. We like to see that casual side. And we have complimentary valet parking for the Hop, so you can pull right underground and park, or go over to the chateau and park and walk across the street.
Okay, so what is the cost if you're going to sit and enjoy food and beverage?
If you want to sit and enjoy the concert, it's free of charge. So just sit on the grass and bring a blanket and put up a chair if you'd like. If you're going to do the food and beer pairing, it's $20 for the food, $40 for the beer and the food combination. And the hot dogs and hamburgers are kind of a la carte as you want. And then our regular menu if you're sitting on the restaurant deck.
Okay. I know you're kicking off with Motherlode Canyon Band
on
Tuesday.
Oh,
so that's a big one.
Always a huge one. Just a big hit. We always love to see them up and really fantastic. We also have Wasatch and Red Rock are our kickoff. So each week, two different beer makers each week covering all corners of Utah. We're going to close with Melvin coming down from Wyoming. So that'll be great later in August. And we have some great bands. Lazaretto's coming up from Salt Lake. They're always a big hit down in Salt Lake. So, and a wide range of music from blues to bluegrass to classic rock. So a fun assortment, something for everybody.
So do you try and pair the beer with the music? Or
We try to pair the beer and food. So local beer, local foods. We hit the farmer's market. So try to do some pairings there. But we do give it a little connection. You know, it's a little more rustic when we're doing bluegrass, and so we do have a little bit of fun with that. But it's great. You can bring the kids and leave them on the grass and come into the adult area, have an adult beverage, and then go back and see the dog and kids over there. So it works out really well for a family event and great for travelers and locals alike.
All right. So give me the rundown of the bands that you've got coming.
So, really some fun bands. Motherlode kicks off, and then we go Desert Ramblers, and then we go Gary Tata Band. And then we have the Two-Headed Monster, and then Lazaretto after that. And then we are going to close off with the Utah County Swillers.
Okay. So. Again, starting Tuesday, running through August 8th, 6 to 9 p.m. Just show on up. Hey, let's talk real quick, because you made another appearance. What was it, on the Today Show?
Yeah, I was last fall or last winter for the holiday season. So hopefully they'll invite us back. We try to get back every year and take a little taste of Utah out to New York. And they're very, very gracious and always fun to have us out there. So it's always great to go out and talk about Utah and skiing and the mountain. You know, just sharing what we have here. Maybe not overshare, but we don't have too many tourists, but you know, share a little bit of taste of Park City and what it's all about to be here.
Yeah, so we got some connections then in the NBC world, or
a little bit, yeah. You know, over the years, we've gotten to know a few folks there, and it really started with the Olympics and when they were out here, and continued that relationship. And you know, I guess that's what happens when you're around a long time.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to mention, Zane?
No, we're just kicking off our summer season and lots of great things going on the mountain. And Deer Valley's got some amazing new runs cut. So if you haven't been out mountain biking yet, get up, hit the trails, come in for a Stein's Burger, and have a glass of wine or beer with us.
Okay. You open for lunch? Open
breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. And then obviously the world-famous brunch every Sunday at 11 o'clock. And that's just been crazy this summer so far.
Good. Hey, thanks, Zane.
All right. We'll